This week, we talk about the balance of depression. Are Freemasonry's constituents manic? You asked for it, we're delivering in an all-new occult profile on the eccentric Arthur Edward Waite. The startling new evidence on the Big Bang Theory. Are we ready to accept new evidence? Is fluidity of opinion a Masonic virtue? And a small bonus, we'll take a look at a short piece from decades ago that aimed to inform our significant others on what Freemasonry is. Stay dialed in.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Freemasons and others, welcome back to the show. This is episode number 437. Well, what's going on in the news? You know, there's not a lot that's going on in the news outside of the coronavirus, COVID-19, novel coronavirus, all these names for this thing that is changing the way we are working in the craft and in the world. It's affecting livelihoods, it's affecting lives, and it's a crazy, crazy time to be here on this planet. And I want you all to know that I believe everything will eventually get better as long as we're doing the things that we're being asked to do to limit the spread. And something that is probably self-evident is that while Freemasonry is something that we can't actually practice in a lodge right now, in your day-to-day interactions, you're practicing it in what we're actually doing, living our lives as Freemasons and doing those things, those civic duties that Masonry asks us to do. Just remember that we're living Freemasonry right now more than ever before. And if you need that connection, that something to do, that Masonic thing, there's so much out there for us to get into. There are virtual study clubs and, of course, podcasts galore. Thank you for listening to this one. But also, there's so much more out there for us to soak in like sponges. There's new books and all kinds of great things. But I will tell you that there is a significant effort to bring weekly, quote-unquote, Masonic meetings to you. And we'll have more on that as it develops. But if I told you that there was a WebEx once a week with a speaker that you could tune into in an untiled way, but Masonic themed, would that interest you? And I think for many of us, the answer is yes, because we've already mostly cleared some night of the week where we want to be able to do something Masonic and interact with somebody, ask questions, that kind of thing. And that will be a thing for us soon. So fingers crossed. I hope you guys all stay safe. The next piece I want to say is I mentioned it on the Masonic Roundtable last week. If you didn't catch that episode, go back and listen. We talked about a lot of the resources we have today as Freemasons to assist us in getting Masonic content or being engaged in something Masonic rather than just saying, yes, we're living it, right? But where's that interaction? Where's that extra thing? So we talked a little bit about that. But in that episode, I spilled the beans working on a podcast. The website is up. It's coming soon. MasonicReaders.com. And it's a Masonic book club. You can read all about it there on the website. The first book that we review is Laudable Pursuit. And I shouldn't say review. The first book in our book club is Laudable Pursuit. And we've got links there for you to purchase the book either through Lulu Press, through Amazon as an audiobook, or as a free PDF. You can just click and download and get right in. All the episodes will be posted right away, so you can binge it if you want, but the hope is that you read a part, listen to the episode, read a part, listen to the episode, that kind of thing. And, yep, so that's that. We've got a great episode, like you heard about at the top of the show. We're going to jump right into the education right after we pay the bills. All right, so it's time to pay the bills. How do we make this show happen? This show happens because you, the listeners, help us out. So how do you help us out, though? Well, since July of 2011, this podcast has been here waiting for you every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Consistency is the name of the game. We are creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is not a small endeavor. It requires hours of work each week on top of what we all have, right? We have work, kids, spouses, and we've got a few ways to help support this show. Really, our two main ways are through donations. You can become a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, and you can do that through Patreon. We have a $2 a month contributor level. You get your name on our website as a contributor. If you're a fellow, that's a $5 a month donation, and that puts your name on the website. I send you a card in the mail. I handwrite these cards when you do those donations. I don't have these things filled out. They're not pre-printed. None of that. This is me really trying to say thanks. Meaningful thanks. And of course, the producer level. Our producer level is $10 a month. You get the name on the website, a thank you card in the mail. And also with that, I'll send you the producer's pin also. Now, that's on Patreon. We have a lot of people who like to support us through PayPal. We offer those same exact perks. The contributor, the fellow, the producer, with all the same stuff through PayPal, a subscription model. So you can do either one of those things, or you can make a one-time gift through PayPal and just say, hey, I'm going to send you $2, or hey, I'm going to send you $3 one time, whatever the case is. I appreciate all of it. It offsets the cost of this podcast. Something to keep in mind is that we also sell the producer's pin by itself. It's $10. I have a Mason's Lady decal, and of course the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry book that I co-wrote with John Ruark that has rave reviews all over Amazon.com, and you can get it on Amazon, not autographed, and you can get it on Audible also. All of the money that comes in through this stuff offsets the cost of putting this program together, and I want you to remember that you're the producer of the program, and in the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. But we have to keep this ship on course. We're always pushing for better lodge experiences, Masonic education, and this show offers a way to assist people in coming up with new ideas and things to bring to lodge and to educate new brothers and people interested in the craft. So I would just say, if you're already a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, or you've donated cash at some point, or bought a pin, or whatever you've done for us, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, many thanks to everybody out there once more who is supporting this show through Patreon or supporting us through PayPal. We can't do it without you, the fellows, the contributors, the producers of the program, in addition to anybody out there who is grabbing our lapel pins. And I did just get a brand new stack, a fresh print stack of It's Business Time books, so those are no longer on back order. So every little bit helps, and it supports the show. So let's get right into this week's first educational piece. And this piece, I think, has room to be updated, but what it's about is it's an article written for the person in our life, the significant other in our life, that doesn't know much about Freemasonry. And so this may be something that could be given to them or told to them or spoken to them or directly said to them when somebody is about to join the craft. And so it's called To the Lady and Family of a Mason. However, again, it has room to be updated, and I think it's okay to say to the significant other of a Mason and their family. But I'm going to read the piece as is, the way all the pronouns are and everything, and just know that we can switch out words and it means the same thing. So here we go. This is called To the Lady and Family of a Mason. A man in your family is now a member of the Masonic fraternity. This will undoubtedly raise some questions in your mind, and we hope the following will be helpful in answering those questions. You are now a Mason's lady, and we take this opportunity to extend our first greeting to you. While you personally have not joined our organization, there are certain things that may be helpful for you to know in the future. At the same time, there are matters of general interest about your Mason and his new organization. When and where did it begin? The Fraternity of Free and Accepted Masons is the oldest, largest, and most widely known fraternal organization in the world. It has its roots in antiquity, and is directly descended from the association of quote-unquote operative masons, the cathedral builders of the Middle Ages who traveled through Europe employing the secrets and skills of their crafts. The organization, as we know it today, began in 1717 in England when cathedral building was on the decline and the operative masons, or Freemasons as then known, started to accept as members those who were not members of the Masons' craft, calling them speculative Masons or accepted Masons. Freemasonry was brought to the United States by our early settlers, and Benjamin Franklin, in an early newspaper published by him, referred to a lodge of Freemasons being in existence in Philadelphia in 1730. We now have, in Maine, 200 lodges with a membership totaling over 36,000. Throughout the world, there are approximately 5 million Masons, with over 3 million of them being in the United States as members of lodges under the jurisdiction of 50 Grand Lodges. I'm going to interject in the paper. As of right now, we likely have just under 1 million Masons in the United States in 2020. Masonry is not, contrary to the common belief, a secret society, but rather a society of secrets. If it were a secret society, Masons would not wear Masonic jewelry or publicly mark their many halls. Masonry does have many traditions and customs, which, of course, are known only to its members. What does Freemasonry mean to a member? It would be difficult to summarize in a brief space all that a Mason learns through his membership. But briefly, Freemasonry encourages a member to apply to his daily living the broad, general principles of morality. Membership is limited to adult men who can meet the recognized qualifications and standards of character and reputation. Freemasonry does not interfere with the duties that a man owes to God, his country, his neighbor, and his family, or himself. Rather, by learning to understand, to live its practices, the fundamental precepts of the organization, he has an opportunity for self-improvement. It helps a good man become a better man, a better father, husband, brother, or son. The apron. During the ceremonies of his initiation, each Mason is presented with a white leather apron. It is, to him, an emblem of innocence and the badge of a Mason. It has in all ages been cherished by the rich, the poor, the high, and the low. It is his for life. He will never receive another one, and has, therefore, been cautioned to take it home and instructed in its care. While perfectly satisfactory for him to do so if he desires, he need not bring it to lodge, as linen aprons are provided for his use in meetings. It is to be placed upon his casket at his death, if his nearest living relative so chooses. Its moral application is explained to a Mason during its presentation. Its physical usage is now revealed to you. Masonic funeral. Any member who was in good standing at the time of his death is entitled to a Masonic funeral if he or his family requests it. Such a request should be made to the master of his lodge, who will make the necessary arrangements with the family, the mortuary, and the minister, if there be one. A service is authorized by the jurisdiction in which you are located and consists of participation of the mortuary, the beginning of the mortuary, and the closing of the graveside, or graveside only. Pallbearers will be furnished at the request of the family. In general, the lodge will do as much or as little as the nearest relative wishes it to do. Let us know. Contacting the lodge is not a difficult matter. The lodge secretary's name appears on all dues cards. If you are unable to contact the secretary when needed, a call or letter to the Grand Secretary will provide the information. Illness. In the event our member becomes ill, we want to know. Again, the same method of notifying us can be used as explained above. In the past, members have fallen ill without our knowing it, and their loved ones have been displeased with us for a seeming act of disregard. Then, in fact, we have been unaware of the problem. Your Mason has joined an organization who wants to assist him when in need, and we need your help to do it. Meetings. Lodges meet in regularly monthly sessions, and on such other days as are necessary to conduct its business and ritualistic work. While every Mason's attendance is solicited, it is not intended that a lodge should interfere with one's regular vocation or duty to family, God, or country. Your Mason has invested time and money in joining our order, and for years to come will be paying annual dues. He can best receive all that is his by frequently participating in deliberations and events. We hope that you will approve and encourage him to attend regularly, and we hope that you will join us whenever possible. Title: In the years to come, it is reasonable to assume that at some time, while you are accompanying your Mason, someone will address him as brother. Brother is neither a sentimental nor familiar form of address, but is a title, a distinction, and an honor indicating that he has been recognized by another Mason. Brother is a title dating back to ancient times and is used in place of Mr. or a similar title to which one is entitled by virtue of his station in life. In Masonry, all men are equal, as no man is regarded for his worldly wealth or honor, and all distinctions are cast away. Are there Masonic-oriented organizations which members of the family may join? There are several groups to which ladies related to Master Masons may apply for membership if they desire, but this is entirely optional. If there are children in the family, they may find interests in Masonic-oriented youth groups whose teachings of patriotism and love of family will, we are sure, be pleasing to you. Masonic Assistance. Across the nation is a network of Masonic Service Association officers. If, while traveling, dire need of aid should arise, consult the telephone directory of a major city for the number. If none is listed, a local lodge will be able to make connections for you. The Blood Bank. The Grand Lodge has established a blood bank, and you and your Mason are protected should the need arise. You are both encouraged to support this program whenever possible. The gift of blood is called the gift of life. Conclusion. We hope you have found this information helpful and that it will assist you in better understanding your Mason's role in life. We urge you to save it as a reference whenever questions arise. Now, again, this paper doesn't really say who wrote it, but I can tell you where it comes from. This comes from the Grand Lodge of Maine. I know this because when it talks about contacting the secretary, it lists the secretary and the address of the Grand Lodge in Maine. So I thought, yes, most of us know all of these things, but this is particular to Maine, and it dates itself, right? There are certain things within this where we know we don't have that many Masons anymore. So this is probably written, I'm guessing, in the 60s or 70s. Nonetheless, good information. And a lot of you out there who listen to this program, your significant other is forced to in the car, and maybe this helps understand, gives them a little bit extra, but by most circumstances, I'm sure most people listening to this, your significant other is probably well aware of everything else. But I thought it was neat just to put out there. The next piece I have this week is by Worshipful Brother Adam Thayer. Now, he wrote a piece a few years ago, and I wanted to read this because right now there's a lot of depression, and I think it's important to remember those of us who get this way on occasion, and let's read what Adam Thayer says about depression in the craft. Recently, I made a post on Facebook about how depression and comedy go hand in hand. The feedback I got was surprising. A lot of Masons wrote me in private saying they too were depressed. And it made me think, am I depressed? Is Freemasonry filled with depressed people? Depression seems to be more prevalent among certain mindsets, the artists, the aestheticists, those who are creative and appreciate beauty. Those who, in a search for truth and beauty, may find themselves naturally drawn to a society that teaches the importance of both. I've often joked in the past that after finishing a big art project, like writing 5 papers in a month, I experience the artistic version of postpartum depression. I feel drained and empty, overwhelmed at the thought of ever writing another word and completely disconnecting from the world around me. Of course, it is nothing like real postpartum, which involves hormones and other complicated things, but it's a pretty appropriate metaphor for my experience. Science has long shown a solid link between creativity and mental disorder, and I know that personally, when I am at my most creative, I'm also a complete wreck. As Lord Byron once said, we of the craft are all crazy. Some are affected by gaiety, others by melancholy, but all are more or less touched. Freemasonry is the perfect home for the artist, who can create and share with his brothers in a place where criticism is generally positive and useful. The written word is especially powerful, as we value the exchange of knowledge so highly. However, our craft has also enjoyed the talents of many successful painters, sculptors, musicians, actors, and those skilled in stagecraft, all of whom find that they may continue to refine their work within our metaphorical walls, and in return, hide allegorical messages in their product for us to discover and enjoy. As for me, I'm just trying to recover from the mad rush of papers in March and April and force my fingers back onto the keyboard. I'm sorry I haven't been as active in writing as I had been in the past, and I hope that I'm on the uphill climb of the roller coaster again. Now, of course, this was a few years ago. Adam Thayer is an emeritus contributor over at the Midnight Freemasons at this point. But I want you all to remember that right now, it's okay to feel a little depressed. We all do, regardless of how you got there. We're here for you. Talk to your brothers. And remember that we are there for each other. All right. Now, here is a brand new piece that I just put together that we published on the Midnight Freemasons just last week. So if you're listening to this on Sunday or Monday, sitting in your office, maybe you're working from home, maybe you're one of those folks who is still out in the field and you're being safe out there, practicing your social distancing, this is a piece that I just wrote. It was published on Friday. I had been writing these occult profile series pieces for the Midnight Freemasons where we were really exploring some of the big names in esoteric thought and philosophy over the years. And so many of them are connected in weird ways, you just wouldn't believe it. But of course I did one on Clausen, I did one on Blavatsky, and some others. And I asked who you wanted me to do an occult profile on next. And the overwhelming answer I got was A.E. Waite. And it took me a little while. I was publishing these every Wednesday for a couple weeks, for a few weeks. And A.E. Waite came up and I said, gosh, A.E. Waite's going to be hard because there's so much about A.E. Waite. I think I did an okay job at putting together this Masonic occult profiles piece for Midnight Freemasons. And let's just get right into it. I hope you enjoy. And let's take a deeper look at Arthur Edward Waite, who he was, what he did, and why he's so revered. Just a note to the reader, as in all of these, I am approaching these from the standpoint of a biographer, a objective look at somebody, and I'm trying to be as intellectually honest as possible. So I will not say that they spoke to the masters or anything definitively, because to the world at large, that's not a real thing. Just like certain religions might not be a real thing to some people, right? So we're very objective about how I'm writing these. But just the same, you can send your hate mail to wcypodcast@gmail.com. Occult Profiles, A.E. Waite, by Midnight Freemason contributor Robert H. Johnson. Quote, for myself, it was a curious experience in more ways than one, and perhaps especially because it was so patent throughout that I could have told the worshipful master all that he was communicating to me. My initiation was nothing, therefore, but a means to an end. I awaited the grades beyond. End quote. So said Arthur Edward Waite, after being made a Freemason on September 19, 1901, in St. Mary Laban Lodge, number 1305. Waite, as I will refer to him in this paper, was a prolific collector of degrees, a soul looking for a way back to the source through the mystic quest, and also a buffoon. Before the reader begins to degrade me for those words, I ask, for the common courtesy of reading the entire article, or listening, you may yet agree with me. Waite was born in October of 1857 to unwed parents in Brooklyn, New York. Shortly after he was born, he gained a sister as well. His father was a merchant shipper who died at an early age, condemning Waite, his sister and mother, to a life of squalor. Waite's mother was from a wealthy family, but because she had a child out of wedlock, her family was not keen on supporting her. Somehow, he still had a decent enough education, having attended a private school in the north of London, and later, at 13 years of age, he attended St. Charles College. While that sounds impressive, it shouldn't be thought that he was some kind of genius. This was simply the way of things in those times. When Waite reached the age of 17, he lost his sister, Frederica, which threw open the gates of the esoteric. His faith, up to this point, had been in Roman Catholicism, but no longer. At this time, Waite was, as many men of his day and social stature were, a clerk. It's an often used title, and it is indeed vague. When amassing records from the British Library, we find that Waite was active in research there quite often beginning in his 21st year of life. And just 3 years later, Waite makes an astonishing discovery, the writings of Eliphas Levi, a prominent French occultist and ceremonial magician. In 1887, Waite got married to Ada Lakeman, and later they have a daughter together. In Arthur's studies, he came across the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, or the HOGD. Befriending a homeopathic London-based doctor, E.W. Berridge, he joined the order in 1891. At this time, the two orders of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn were in existence. Waite had joined the Outer Order. It appears as if he removed himself from this order after just 2 years. 3 years later, in 1886, he joins again. 3 years later, in 1889, Waite joins the Second Order of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, and 2 years after that, he becomes a Freemason. It is interesting to note that a Masonic organization like the self-styled Rosicrucian Order, the SRIA, begets the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn out of a need for practical occultism, which gains members who are not Freemasons, and then who go on to become Freemasons. And if you're A.E. Waite, you then join the SRIA, or the Societas Rosicrucia in Anglia. The Ouroboros of initiation is pretty intense here. Joining the SRIA is an amusing thing for him to have done, considering his own commentary on the organization. In the final chapter of a book on Rosicrucianism, he wrote the following: "The most notable circumstance connected with this society is the complete ignorance which seems to have prevailed amongst its members, generally concerning everything connected with Rosicrucianism." Freemasonry was also not outside the bounds for an attack. He wrote the following of the gentle craft: "It being singularly devoid of prejudices and singularly unaffected by the crazes of the time, it preaches a natural morality and has so little interest in mysticism that it daily misinterprets and practically despises its own mystical symbols." It seems appropriate to say that Waite searched everywhere for an organization that would give him the confirmation bias he so needed. He collected degrees and orders faster than a Grand Lodge festival day. He even received honors of being connected with Martinism by way of the mail. He literally sent his obligation in by mail, and the return letter gave him the title that he was looking for, and implied permission to start a London-based version of Martinism in 1887. Curious, isn't it? Like so many occultists in his day, Waite founded his own order in 1903. It was called the Independent and Rectified Order, RRFAC, and was disbanded a little more than 10 years later. The actions of Waite caused much internal strife within these organizations: the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, Societas Rosicrucia in Anglia, his Rectified Order, and eventually, in 1914, he left many of them. Again, it's unclear why he did this. Speculation rules the day, but most likely, it's due to his failure to be elected to the high office of celebrant in the SRIA. But Waite wasn't done. He then formed the Fellowship of the Rosy Cross, one more Rosicrucian-type order within the London area. If we examine the various records, there are 8 other Rosicrucian orders at that time. The first meeting of the Fellowship of the Rosy Cross was on July 9th in 1915 at a hotel. The organization was styled similarly to the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, with inner and outer orders. Shortly before this Rosicrucian Golden Dawn debacle in 1910, Waite had been installed as Master of Runnymede Lodge. A peculiar episode was a celebration he held as Master of the Lodge, where he conferred some strange rites on his brethren present. The Great Mystery of the Vault of the Adepts, under dispensation from the unknown superior of the Sodality of the Shades. Sounds legit. If you felt the earth move just now, it's because you just channeled my eye roll. Waite had become prolific in his writings. By 1915, having published works on alchemy, ceremonial magic, divination, general esotericism, and more, he was a regular old genius when it came to these things. In fact, even today, some of his works are still considered the gold standard. Books like Eliphas Levi's Transcendental Magic, Its Doctrine and Ritual, was not only translated to English by Waite, but also edited. No small feat. This version of the text is still in print today. While some celebrate his writing by claiming that academics praise his works, there is really no evidence to support this. On the contrary, Waite's writings were often rude, arrogant, and written in a way that was condescending to his contemporaries. His books were full of the worst kinds of errors. No, not grammar. Historical and factual errors. Grammar police may be triggered. Sorry, guys. The Grand Lodge of Iowa in 1916 contacted Waite and awarded a strange title, Past Senior Grand Warden. One doesn't make much of this, although Waite certainly must have, because he uses it on the first page of his book, A New Encyclopedia of Freemasonry. Some years later, Ada, his wife, dies, and in 1924 he remarries. Of his new wife, Mary Broadbent Schofield, not much is written. Waite had been genuinely dedicated to the study of the occult. So much so that in addition to writing and publishing, he even founded a study group. The Masonic Study Society was formed by him in 1921. Going through some research on Waite, one finds reference to a strange and out of place yet exciting tidbit. The great and prolific writer, Reverend Joseph Fort Newton, author of the acclaimed book The Builders, is said to have been quite fond of Waite. No article on Waite can be complete without mentioning his one overwhelming gift to the world, his tarot deck. Based on the Italian tarot deck, Solobusco, 1490-1491, he produced his styled deck, which was one of the first of its kind and would become one of the most recognized contemporary decks ever produced. It contained not only the major arcana, the trump cards, but all of the cards, 78 in total. The artwork for them was completed by Pamela Coleman Smith and published by the Rider Publishing Company. Today, the deck is mostly referred to as the Rider-Waite deck. It is this author's opinion that this is a tragedy. The lesser-used name Smith-Waite deck is what should be used. It was Pamela's artwork that made these cards readable, accessible, and usable to her. I think we are all indebted just as much as to Waite. The deck was published in 1910 by the company I mentioned earlier, the Rider Publishing Company. Today, that company is attached to none other than Penguin, which is attached to Random House. On a personal note, I picked up my first tarot deck, a Smith-Waite deck, at a Goodwill store for $7.99, a steal. Speaking of money, Waite then in 1911 produced a companion book for his tarot deck called A Pictorial Key to the Tarot. Again, it should be noted that the publishing of this pack was the defining moment in the tarot for ages to come. Men like Paul Foster Case, founder of Boda, based entire systems on the tarot and became known far and wide as the foremost expert on it, as used as a tool for psychological work, introspection, and contemplation and contemplative work in general. Dr. Paul Clark, founder of Fraternity of the Hidden Light and former member of BODA, writes in his biography of Paul Case, the close relationship and correspondences between Waite and Case. It's fascinating reading. When Paul Case eventually publishes his own tarot deck, it was considered to be similar to the Smith-Waite deck, but without the quote-unquote errors made by Waite. There is so much I can write about Waite. So much has been written. I do it a discredit to retell much of what has been already stated, but it's my hope that this short and fascinating look at him will prompt the reader to dive deeper. Waite had joined the Royal Arch, the Knights Templar, CBCS. He traveled all over the world to collect strange and wild degrees. One such degree, the Grand Rite of the 47th in Sweden. He was original in thought but rude in his critiques. If you didn't agree with him, you were an idiot. If he reviewed your work, you were an idiot. Only he knew the true doctrine of anything, and his pompous, arrogant attitude was and is contemptible. You love to hate him. In 1942, Waite transitioned, and his obituary was published in the Freemasons Chronicle. In three paragraphs, his works and life are laid out in a way that doesn't quite praise him, but instead, simply acknowledges him. He was indeed a prolific individual, but, as with everyone we've covered, had faults. Earlier in this short essay, I mentioned that Waite had favor with Reverend Joseph Fort Newton. Newton wrote of Waite, quote, "Brother Waite warns us against the dark alleys that lead nowhere, and the false lights that lure to ruin, and he protests against those who would open the Pandora's box of the occult on the altar of Masonry. After a long study of occultism, magic, omens, talismans, and the like, he has come to draw a sharp line between the occult and the mystical, and therein he is wise." End quote. Of course, Waite was probably okay with all that occultism and traveling down the dark alleys, as long as he was your guide and you worshipped at the altar of his own pen. Waite offers us some beautiful readings and perspectives and deserves our attention. If we read his works, it's important to recognize his bias towards his own thoughts, to be conscious of his superiority complex, but also to open our minds to the possibilities of his most outrageous claims, no matter how mysterious. Special note, there are other claims that Waite initially joined Runnymede Lodge No. 2430 in Raysbury, England, and this is true to the end that the lodge which was performing the ritual for his initiation was doing so as a courtesy for Runnymede Lodge. Well, there you have this look at A.E. Waite. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you had some moments where you had a chuckle, some wow moments, some really interesting stuff. All of my sources are listed in the article as well. Ars Quartor Coronatorum, the Transactions of Quartor Coronati Lodge. We used the book, The Masonic Career of A.E. Waite, Shadows of Life and Thought, a retrospective review in the form of memoirs on A.E. Waite. Lots of great stuff there. So I hope you enjoyed. And let me know what you think, or if you have additional questions I can help you answer. We're going to finish out this week with a piece called Whence Came You? Recent Scientific Challenges to the Big Bang Theory by Elaine Polonius Fellin, published December 23rd, 2018, so just a couple years ago. Put your science caps on, everybody. From time immemorial, the thinking man has pondered the origins of the universe and his role in the cosmos. Scientists in the early 20th century brought forth the Big Bang Theory to explain the creation of the universe. Recent scientific research, however, provides compelling evidence that the age of the universe could be infinite. Was there a singular starting point of the universe? What if the universe has existed forever? Understanding the Big Bang Theory. The Big Bang Theory postulates that our universe did have a definite beginning. Prior to that, there was nothing. After that moment, there was something, our universe. According to this theory, our universe came into existence as a singularity approximately 13.7 billion years ago. Singularities are thought to exist at the core of black holes, which are areas of intense gravitational pressure. The pressure inside a black hole is thought to be so intense that finite matter is actually smashed into an infinite density. The Big Bang theory argues that our known universe began as an infinitely small, hot, and dense singularity. Then there was an explosion, at which time the singularity inflated and then cooled. The universe changed over millions of years from something tiny and very hot to the universe's current size and temperature. And the universe has continued to expand and cool throughout history. Thus, the Big Bang theory provided a scientifically based explanation of what happened at the very beginning of our universe, continuing until our current time. Evidence for the Big Bang theory. In the 1920s, Edwin Hubble studied distant spirals in the deep skies, measuring the individual stars within the spirals and determining the brightness of each star. By combining these measurements with their movement and brightness, Hubble deduced that the universe was expanding from a once compacted state. If the universe was smaller and denser in the past, the Big Bang theory argues that the universe expanded from a smaller state to reach its current point. In the 1940s, George Gamow added to the theory by postulating that if the universe was smaller, it must have been hotter, defined by its wavelength, radiation's energy, and temperature stretch as the fabric of space expands. Thus, if the universe were smaller, radiation wavelengths were condensed and created a higher temperature. Extrapolating backwards, there is a point reached when radiation becomes too energetic to form neutral atoms. In the 1960s, Arno Penzias and Robert Woodrow Wilson experimented with the Holmdel-Horn antenna, built to detect radio waves bounced off of echo balloon satellites. When Penzias and Wilson reduced their data, they discovered a persistent, low, steady, and mysterious noise. Certain that the radiation they detected on a wavelength of 7.35 centimeters did not come from Earth, the Sun, or the Milky Way galaxy, they eventually postulated that it was the radiation left over from an explosion that filled the universe at the beginning of its existence. They termed this remnant energy Cosmic Microwave Background Radiation, CMBR. Their work helped to cement the wide-scale acceptance of the Big Bang theory. Recent scientific challenges to the Big Bang theory. Modern scientific research demonstrates compelling evidence against the concept of a singularity as the beginning of the universe. Astrophysicist Ethan Siegel argues that instead of the singularity point, the universe transitioned from a prior state, not filled with matter, antimatter, radiation, neutrinos, etc. Undergoing a period of cosmic inflation, this pre-universe was filled with a form of energy inherent to space itself and expanded slowly, without a change in energy or temperature. In the phase of cosmic inflation, there was an exponential expansion that stretched the universe flat and wiped out any ultramassive relic particles and topological defects. Ending approximately 13.8 billion years ago, cosmic inflation set up the conditions that led to the Big Bang event, thus creating our known observable universe. This theory adds the fascinating possibility that we may be living in a multiverse and our observable universe is just one of many universes. In February of 2015, two physicists, Ahmed Farag Ali, professor at Vienna University in Egypt, and Sarya Das, professor at University of Lethbridge in Alberta, Canada, published Cosmology from Quantum Potential. Their work proposes a corrected version of Einstein's theory of general relativity and demonstrates inaccuracies in the current Big Bang theory. In the new formulation, the universe did not originate from an infinitely dense singularity. In fact, the theory suggests that the age of the universe could be infinite, according to the study co-author Sarya Das. Moreover, Das and Ali's research utilized Bohemian mechanics to reconcile two of the most dominant theories in physics, quantum mechanics and general relativity. Using this form of quantum theory, the researchers calculated a small correction term that could be included in Einstein's theory of general relativity. In the new formulation, there is no zero-point singularity, and the universe is infinitely old. Destroying the ignorance. The Masonic Philosophical Society was established with the primary ambition to destroy ignorance, which begs the question, what is ignorance? Perhaps ignorance is accepting what others tell you or what you have been taught without questioning. Instead of blindly accepting concepts like the Big Bang Theory as fact, Masonry teaches an individual to question why we believe something, to do our own research, and to consider other points of view. By questioning our preconceived notions, we open new doors of insights into how our world works and our role in the cosmos. Well, I hope you enjoyed that short piece. Now, I drug you through some fascinating research in the quantum singularity, Big Bang stuff. But at the end, the point is to always question. It's our duty as Masons to look at various viewpoints and always think about the next set of true data and always consider it. That's it for this week. I hope you all enjoyed. I hope you're enjoying the new format where we're doing the music and everything behind all of the pieces. If you hate it, let me know. If you love it, let me know. Send me an email. The point is that we're always going to be trying to improve the production value of the show to bring you something from the ground up, the best thing that I can do to give back to Masonry. You guys all helped me do that. So thank you so much. I hope you check out the Midnight Freemasons Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays for new content. We've got some great news coming up. Got a new contributor to the Midnight Freemasons I think you're all going to love. I hope you continue to check out the Masonic Roundtable going live every Thursday. Check out the new Masonic Readers website. Bookmark it now. It's not quite up on iTunes or anything yet, but it will be. You know, you'll hear all about that on the Whence Came You podcast Facebook page. Follow us on Instagram, follow us on YouTube, make sure you download, make sure you like, do all these things. Check all the boxes, click all the stuff. It helps us out immensely, so wherever you decide to consume this show, give us a like or whatever the applicable thing is. I also need to mention that on the website, I have updated my speaking schedule. Lots of events got canceled. Which ones? You're going to have to go over there and check it out. Pretty much everything. So still waiting to hear back on several other events that are happening, and that's it. So stay safe, practice your social distancing, keep being a Freemason. For Whence Came You, stay healthy, take care, stay on the level, and we'll talk to you all next week. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.